So after all the hullabaloo about incoming Congresswoman Frederica Wilson and the head-snapping hats that won't be worn, we started thinking, is it possible to be a fashion diva or a dapper Dan and a member of Congress? We're turning once again to the diva of all things fashionable and stylish in this town and, for that matter, around the country, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Robin Givhan. In just a few days, she'll be joining Newsweek and the Daily Beast as a style and culture correspondent. Welcome back, Robin. Thanks so much for joining us. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Thanks for having me.
I did want to ask about this hat ban. This was not always in existence, was it?
Well, it goes back for almost a century, really. And it started out that actually people on the floor wore their hats. And the idea was that it was sort of to be a bit of an affront to the king, so to speak. And somewhere around, I believe in the mid to late 1800s, a congressman from New Jersey finally, after much pressure, created the hat ban.
Why did he want to ban hats?
Well, I think he felt that it was just more dignified for the gentlemen to be in the chambers without their hat, that it was a sign of respect to remove them, just as it is commonplace now for men to take off their hats when they enter a room. And even when the famous Bella Abzug arrived with her flamboyant hats, she removed her hat when she was in chambers. She did not wear a hat on the floor.
To that end, Frederica Wilson has said that the rule against wearing hats is sexist. It tries to make the male model of decorum normative. I don't know if she used those words, but those are the
right,
words that
right.
Well, I will use. And did Bella Abzug make, I would assume Bella Abzug was not afraid to speak her mind about many things.
Now,
so did she try to fight the hat ban too?
You know, as far as I know, she did not make a particularly big stink about the hat ban. She had once remarked that as a lawyer, it was normal for her to think that she should remove her hat when she, for instance, entered a courtroom. So it was no big deal to take off the hat when she was in chambers. But, the idea, though, that it's sexist, I think it's a bit of a gray area. Because in some ways, it's sexist by default, the idea that all the people who were in chambers at the time were in fact men. But it wasn't really meant as something that was to benefit men. And so sometimes I think, you know, when you start getting into whether or not something is sexist, you start asking yourself, well, does it benefit one sex more so than it does the other? And that was never the intention of the ban.
There are other wardrobe styles that have changed over the years. For example, it's my understanding that for a very long time, there was a rule against women wearing pants or trousers on the floor of the House or the Senate. Is that your understanding as well?
I was fascinated, actually, when I discovered that. I think it was sometime in the mid-80s when the trouser ban for women was really overturned. And, you know, when people talk about, sort of the decorum of Washington and sort of what's appropriate and why there's such a sense of conservativeness in dress here, I think that's really a prime explanation for why there is. When you think that in the 1980s, women were not allowed to wear trousers to their place of business. That's really extraordinary. I mean, that's not very long ago at all. And so then we start talking about things like companies that demand that women wear pantyhose, even in, you know, the dead of summer, or they can't wear sleeveless dresses. You know, and those things sound so absurd when you put them in the context of the greater fashion universe. But you do get a sense of why they resonate in Washington.
Are there any fashion outliers in Washington, people who are in these kinds of professions where there are dress codes, whether they're spoken or unspoken, but are still quite fashionable? Are any role models for people to point to?
You know, Washington, in my experience, has very few outliers in the city business. And by that, I mean government. I mean, most people don't get to these positions by being outliers. They get to these positions by not being, you know, the nail that sticks out. So they understand how to blend in. But I do think there are people who acquit themselves well. And I think that there are also categories within that very conservative realm where you can get away with it a little bit more. I mean, I've always felt that, for instance, African-American congressmen have a bit more leeway. And in part, that goes back to the history of their sense of style. And, you know, I'm not talking about being flamboyant.
Because no purple suits.
No purple suits, no suit jackets with five or six buttons, no giant pinstripes. But little details like the French cuffs and the pocket square or a tie that's just a bit more interesting than your basic stripes.
You know, there are a couple of Republicans who are known kind of for being fashionable. I'm thinking about Orrin Hatch, for example, of Utah. is somebody who comes to mind who's always got the French cuffs and.
Well, I think I think you're using fashionable very loosely.
Okay.
Very generously.
Okay.
No,
what about
on
the female side? Or are women under even more pressure to toe the line?
Well, I mean, I think they are under more pressure. I don't know so much, though, that it's the toe the line, because unlike men, there isn't this really defined uniform of what they're supposed to wear. So they have this range. I mean, they can wear a skirt or a dress, or they now can wear trousers, and a lot of them do. I mean, I'm thinking Nancy Pelosi, for instance, is well known for her beautiful and very stylish Armani pantsuits. But I think what happens with them is they want to make sure that their clothing is not a distraction. And I always think that's sort of the operative word in Washington. Don't let your clothes be a distraction.
We're talking to Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Robin Givhan. She chronicles style and fashion in the nation's capital and around the world. It's day one of the 112th Congress, and we're talking about fashion in the halls of Congress. We're hoping that's not an oxymoron. You wrote about the fact that even people who sort of clean up nicely don't necessarily do that in Washington. And you wrote about how Kirsten Gillibrand, the junior senator from New York, mm-hmm. who was photographed in Vogue magazine. She looked fabulous.
Absolutely.
She did not wear anything crazy. I mean, these are some classic styles. But when you saw her actually doing official business, she didn't wear anything like that.
Yeah,
what's up with that?
It seems to be that there's this kind of disconnect between the idea that fashion always has to mean flamboyant, outrageous, edgy, you know, all those things that people think of when they think of a runway show. And it doesn't sort of dawn on them that a designer like a Michael Kors or a Ralph Lauren, and these are, you know, people who have fashion shows, but their clothes are really fundamentally cut for an American woman's body.
Okay, but there's also the cost question. I think isn't part of the calculation here is that constituents don't want to wander in to your office and see you wearing something that would cost as much as their house payment?
I think that's true, depending on where you're coming from. But we also have to take note that Kirsten Gillibrand is the senator from New York, and the fashion industry is based in New York. So I think it would serve her well to pull some things from her constituents' lines, and she could very well justify that. But no, I don't think that they want to look like they've spent $10,000 on a single ensemble. But I also think that most people want their representative to represent them in a way that is very polished and does look like they're making an effort, that they walk into Congress with a certain amount of respect and perhaps even a little bit of awe for the place that they're going into. And a lot of that comes through in what they choose to wear.
So what's your best advice to the new members coming? We've been featuring freshmen today on today's program. What's your best advice for people coming in, particularly those who ran on a platform of, I'm challenging the conventional wisdom here. I'm here to upend the status quo. I'm not here to be part of it.
If you believe that upending the status quo means that you should show up for your first day wearing a pair of jeans and a work shirt, then, you know, show up that way. But the reality is that I think what a lot of them were saying to their constituents is, we take the business of governing seriously. And we want you to vote for us because we're going to go up there and we're going to take care of business. We're going to get things done. We're going to be very serious about this. And whatever side of the aisle you're on, I think the way that you show that is you show up like you take this very seriously. So look in the mirror and be polished. Don't look like you just rolled out of bed and grabbed a rumpled suit.
Robin Givhan, special correspondent for Style and Culture for Newsweek and The Daily Beast, starting Monday. Robin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And thank all of you for listening to our special broadcast from Capitol Hill on this opening day of the 112th Congress. I'm Michelle Martin, and you've been listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more tomorrow.